Food Workers v. Illinois American Water Company. Mr. Potter.
Good morning. Terry Potter for the Water Company. As you know from reviewing the briefs, this is a matter regarding our efforts to vacate a labor arbitration award. The background is pretty general. An employee who was an operator for the water company, and as part of his job functions and duties, and the reason why he got paid a great deal of money was that he was to maintain a license with the state of Illinois through the Illinois EPA. Through an investigation, the company discovered he was not maintaining his license.
I thought he came to you and said that he didn't have his
license. It was disputed as to how that actually took place. Yes, that's how he testified.
Right, but let me kind of jump to the center of this. My problem with your brief, really, is that it seems to gloss over the fact that the arbitrator really had two questions in front of him simultaneously. One of them was the validity of the last chance agreement itself. And then, secondarily, if the last chance agreement were found to be valid, there was the question how to interpret it. And I think a number of the things that he did that you're complaining about really were in the context of the first of those questions. He's saying, you know, nobody has to comply with anything under the last chance agreement if it's not even a valid agreement. And that's why the union was advising Mr. Williams, you know, to hold off on the repayment schedule. And that's why in the end, once he finally finds, well, yes, it's valid, it's as though it comes to life then, and he works out an offset way to get you paid back.
Well, I'm a little confused, Your Honor, because the arbitrator in his decision found clearly, he said, the agreement,
eventually he does, but I'm saying we've got these two things in front of the arbitrator, and the arbitrator says in the face of pending arbitration over the validity of the last chance agreement, the provisions of the last chance agreement, he needed to interpret what was the force of those provisions while it was in question, I'll put it that way. And he decides that in some sense they're suspended. I'm going to put words in his mouth, but that's eventually what he really does. And then once he decides, yes, it's a valid last chance agreement, which he does, then he crafts his remedy so as not to penalize Mr. Williams for the union, actually, for the mere act of challenging it.
Right. You're absolutely right. You're correct. But once he established that it was valid, the agreement was valid, then he has to interpret that agreement and follow its terms.
Well, but retrospectively, I think that's his problem. Retrospectively, what do you do during the face of the pending arbitration before you find out it's valid? I mean, the only problem, as I understand, is that Williams doesn't enter into this repayment schedule.
Right, exactly.
That's all it is. And, of course, the arbitrator works out a perfect way for that to happen. You'll get reimbursed because you can offset everything.
I think I'm understanding your question now. Procedurally, what happens in this interim period?
Right. And I'm just saying, given the deference we owe to arbitrators, given the fact that he's got to coordinate these two issues at the same time, doesn't he come up with a solution that is reasonable enough in light of the underlying CBA arbitration, which is the thing that's used for the initial question of the validity of the last chance agreement, and then the last chance agreement kind of gets factored in there later?
Well, excuse me, but the last chance agreement stands on its own. The CBA doesn't play into it at all.
CBA plays with the first question, though, whether it's a valid last chance agreement. That's all about the CBA.
Well, the only reason they attacked the validity was whether or not, actually, the steward had the authority or agency to enter into the agreement. That
was
the validity.
Which is under the CBA.
Sure.
So the CBA is involved with, if you will, issue one, and the last chance agreement, if you get to it, which the arbitrator does, is its own thing for issue two.
Right. So. Right, and I agree totally. You have to look at the CBA in terms of the agency factors. But there's, again, ultimately what we're talking about here is the last chance agreement. You have to focus your attention on that document.
Well,
because
why do you have to do that if the arbitrator finds that the pendency of the arbitration affects, let's say, the timing of the ability to enforce the last chance agreement?
Based on what? He had no authority under the last chance agreement to make that determination. That's our point. There's nothing in that last chance agreement that specifies that there's some sort of...
Where does it say? I know the clause that you're saying, the last chance agreement has certain things, but I'm not sure. I don't see anything in the last chance agreement about the status of its clauses during a good faith challenge. It's like a plea bargain. If you're challenging the plea bargain itself, you can't enforce an appeal waiver under the plea bargain. Or you can say there's ineffectiveness of counsel in entering into the agreement, and you can't say, well, you agreed to the plea. I mean, there's a little bit of a chicken and egg issue here.
Well, ultimately, what it gets down to is that we had an agreement with Mr. Williams and the union under the last chance agreement. They agreed to these terms.
I understand that, because you definitely want to jump ahead to that last chance agreement.
Sure.
That was the only thing that ever happened. And I'm sure it happens a lot that people sign last chance agreements, and that's the only agreement, and the judge and the arbitrator probably never would have even gotten involved with it, actually. But that isn't the only thing in this particular case because of the challenge to the agreement itself.
Well, I guess I have a hard time understanding his procedural ability to rule as he did regarding the discharge once he finds the agreement's valid, when there's no mechanism otherwise set forth contractually. Because we're talking about a contract here.
Right, no, we're not talking about...
There's no mechanism contractually set forth to give him that authority, and he's limited by the contract. He's limited by the contract.
Which contract? Only
the last chance agreement,
from
our position.
You don't think he can interpret anything else?
No, absolutely not. That's the whole sticking point with arbitration. It's the four corners of the agreement. That's what you agreed to, and that's
I understand all of that, but the fact is he needs to decide what to do with the first challenge, what to do with the advice that Mr. Williams is, or what to do with the fact that the last chance agreement itself might be bad.
But once he finds it's not, end of discussion. Didn't you just turn to the last chance agreement itself and interpret it? And he didn't interpret it in a correct fashion within the four corners. He added terms. He didn't misunderstand it. He didn't misrepresent or misunderstand.
Where did he say he was adding terms?
Well, we're saying he added terms, Your Honor.
But he purported to be interpreting the last chance agreement, didn't
Absolutely.
He?
And we're saying he's in doing so, he ignored terms.
Interpretation, though, is not reviewable, so...
You're right. Normally, if he's just misunderstanding or misapplied or misrepresenting,
it wants to be.
Pardon? If you ignore the terms or add terms, that's different than misapplying the interpretation. The interpretation was clear cut here. If the employee breached one of the conditions of the last chance, he admitted he did. He didn't go into the prepayment schedule as he honored under the agreement he would do with the company. Once he breached that, all bets are off. He's
terminated.
But there
is paragraph 6 in the last chance agreement. Any disputes regarding the meaning of this agreement will be resolved solely through the collective bargaining agreement, grievance, arbitration procedures.
Right, right.
So if there's any question about, you know, what does it mean to be failing to comply with a condition, for example, paragraph 2, failure to comply with any of these conditions. Has he really failed to comply with the condition if the backdrop is the other aspect of the arbitration?
You're right. It's a mechanisms clause. It's a mechanisms clause. It doesn't say...
Well, that's your interpretation
right.
of it. But what if the arbitrator...
But remember, look at paragraph 2 of the last chance agreement, the last sentence. It says that he can't, once he finds there's a breach of the agreement, he can't lessen the discipline from a discharge. He can't do that. He found there was a breach. The employee admitted there was a breach. He didn't do what he promised. And yet he turned around in violation of that specific term and lessened the discharge. Plain and simple.
Thank you, Mr. Potter. Mr. Orloff?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Charles Orloff. I'm privileged to represent UFCW Local 1546 in this matter. The company waived its rights under the last chance agreement. The day after the last chance agreement was signed, the union grieved the validity of that agreement, and under that agreement, the company could have said, sorry, paragraphs 2 and 4 of that agreement say you can't even grieve. But they didn't do that. The company processed that grievance, the validity of the last chance agreement itself, through to arbitration. And if that wasn't enough, in front of the arbitrator, I'm sounding too strident, I apologize.
Well, let me ask you...
In front of the arbitrator, I'm sorry.
Let me ask you this. What happens, in my understanding of this case, de facto, is, as you say, the day after the last chance agreement is signed, the union grieves it, and then, at least as the arbitrator seems to see things, as this period of time unfolds while that grievance is being processed, the arbitrator eventually decides essentially that that processing period creates an extension of time or something on these various obligations. So instead of a payment schedule with the company within 2 weeks after he signs this agreement, the arbitrator reconciles the two arbitrations and seems to see this as meaning after the validity of this agreement is resolved instead of after 2 weeks. So where does the arbitrator get the power to do that?
The parties stipulated to the arbitrator, and we've quoted that in our brief.
In your brief, yeah.
Whether there was cause, and the word cause, quote, was defined in the stipulation as cause under the collective bargaining agreement. Cause in many collective bargaining agreements means good cause, just cause. That's how it's universally understood. And Your Honor, that is where the arbitrator got that authority.
But your position seems to, I mean, it's the opposite of my issue with Mr. Potter. Your position seems to read the last chance agreement out of the picture. Do you have to persuade us that there essentially de facto is no last chance agreement in order to prevail?
Our position is that was waived. But yes, indeed, you're correct. The arbitrator said, that's a valid agreement.
Yeah.
But taken...
So what do we do with that?
That word can't be taken out of context. The entire context was that he was going to look at that, and if I may quote the couple sentences immediately before he said that. He said, I'm going to apply generally accepted principles of contract interpretation. Contract language must be interpreted against the drafter. It must be interpreted in harmony with external law. And it must be interpreted to avoid grossly unreasonable results, which kicks him back to
the... Yeah, but it's the sentence that follows that's strange, that somehow it would be grossly unfair or something to enforce the agreement when it had been challenged. That's what I don't get, right?
Well, what he's saying is... Yes, that is the next sentence.
What contract principle is that? I don't understand that. You can't interpret a contract because it's been challenged, even when the challenge is resolved against the challenger? What? That sounds like...
The arbitrator is empowered by the parties. In fact, the stipulation was just cause, or cause under the collective bargaining agreement.
So he's got this last chance agreement, and the company or the union says it's invalid. And he says, no, it's valid. But then he says, even though it's valid, the fact that you challenged it, the fact that it was challenged, would make it grossly unfair to enforce it. And that's what I don't understand. That seems batty.
The arbitrator, I believe, is saying it, and I'll quote, I find the last chance agreement does not permit the discharge of Mr. Williams for failure to comply with the provision of the agreement while the validity of that provision is subject to a good faith, non-frivolous challenge.
Yes, that's what I don't understand. If the challenge may be in good faith and non-frivolous, but if it's resolved against the challenger, how can it be a basis for not enforcing the rights created by the agreement?
We believe under the just cause clause or cause clause of the collective bargaining agreement, which the parties stipulated to him, gave him that authority. And In our brief, we...
But I don't... That seems like a separate point. The sentence you were quoting seems to say that if there's a challenge to the last chance agreement, then even though the challenge is rejected, the last chance agreement can't be enforced. And that seems like a complete non sequitur.
In practical terms, we're talking about discharging somebody under a labor agreement when the claim for which he may be discharged is yet pending before the arbitrator and not decided. In other words, the company could well have waited until that grievance was resolved and then implement the terms if indeed the last chance agreement survives or even if it doesn't.
Provision that the arbitrator says hasn't been resolved?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I didn't hear the question.
This provision that hasn't been resolved, according to the arbitrator, what was that?
The initial grievance filed by the union the day after the last chance agreement was signed, which says this discipline, the last chance agreement, is too severe.
Okay, but didn't the arbitrator decide that no, the last chance agreement is valid? Didn't he decide that?
He did say it's valid, and
if it's valid, what difference does it make that it was challenged? You don't reject a challenge and then say, well, your challenge fails, but it was made in good faith, and therefore I'll treat it as if it succeeded. Isn't that what he did?
Yes, and he did that.
I thought what he did was more just adjust the dates when that one provision, the only provision anybody says Mr. Williams violated was the repayment schedule.
Yes.
And it seems to me that all the arbitrator was doing was saying, yes, there is a last chance agreement, but you can't violate him on the repayment schedule ground while this, you know, it's just a suspension. It's in effect fully for all purposes once the challenge is resolved.
Yes.
Otherwise, you really do wind up in Wonderland, I'm afraid.
And I see my time is up, but Judge Posner, to answer your question, he was taking his authority from the stipulation of the parties when they sat down at the beginning of the arbitration and said, here are your marching orders. We're putting cause as your marching orders. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Royal. Mr. Potter, how much time does he have? 1 minute?
I guess after hearing this argument, I probably should have gone back to the trenches where I came from and put in labor arbitration cases to give you additional guidance, because these cases in terms of policy and discharges being linked happen all the time, where the union attacks the policy as well as the underlying discharge resulting from the implementation of the policy or application of the policy, attendance or other work rules all the time, where you'll have an arbitration where the union will attack the underlying policy in conjunction with the discipline that resulted from the application of that policy, which is what happened here in the same way.
Mr. Orlov's argument that you actually, in these stipulations, just waived the whole last chance agreement, lock, stock, and barrel?
Well, interesting.
He says it in his brief. It's not the first time you've seen it. I assume you read his brief.
Didn't happen. Obviously, didn't happen. The arbitrator didn't interpret that way. We can read that from the award. We stipulate, like we always do in every arbitration you're in, regarding what the issue is. And this was bifurcated. It was in terms of another group of employees, including Mr. Williams, on the suspensions. And the second part was solely regarding the discharge of Mr. Williams. When we addressed the former group of issues, we specifically referenced the just cause provision of the CBA because that controlled. Mr. Williams' discharge was solely controlled by the last chance agreement, and there was no specific reference to the just cause provision. So, we didn't waive it in any sense in terms of the stipulation. We simply didn't. And again, the arbitrator understood that because he even said so in his decision, or award rather, that he couldn't go into the CBA because the discharge is solely controlled by the last chance agreement. And that's where we end the discussion for the most part.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr. Potter and Mr. Orlov. We'll move to our last case.